Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and certainly the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls because we have with us a very, very special guest tonight. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, and we're going to be talking about his experiences with the Special Forces as he was stationed in Vietnam during the Vietnamese War, and, of course, his travels, his studies since that time. This is an important issue because, you know, those of you who listen to this program, I'm sure you love America, as I do. We love the America of integrity and honesty, an America that stands for the values of freedom throughout the world. But there has been, and as I pointed out, going back to even before the writing of the Constitution, another force in America, a dark and sinister force that had a different agenda, and that was to use this country, this fledgling country as it was seen in the 1600s, to be the force that would bring about the new world order, the new Atlantis, to restore that wicked society that existed in ancient times. If it ever did exist, we don't know, but Plato wrote about lost Atlantis in his dialogues. And if you read the occult literature, as I do, you will find that people who embrace the dark side believe Atlantis was real, and America then was to be used to recreate that. So you have here the noble and Christian and the trustworthy faction within our society, many times made up of servicemen who volunteered and been willing to give their lives to preserve the freedom and idealism that America represented to you and I. And then, of course, another force, a dark and sinister force that had a different agenda, a new world order, a new world agenda, and America was to create this empire and restore lost Atlantis. Well, when Colonel Marvin, of course, was in Vietnam, and I'm going to let him tell you the story. He headed a special forces unit that was working with one of the indigenous groups or tribes within South Vietnam. And, of course, his job and the job of his special forces group were to restore order and to win these people over so they would have confidence in the government in Saigon. Colonel Marvin, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, I'm proud to be here with you, Dr. Stan. One thing I'd like to point out before we get into my experiences, just you reminded me of it when you were talking, that we all, every citizen in this country, I believe, should be praying for the men and women of our armed forces. I wrote an editorial here the other day. It doesn't matter what I believe about the CIA or about the White House or the President. The soldiers and sailors and Marines and Coast Guard, they have to do what they're told, and our prayers should be with them.
Amen to that. And certainly we're so pleased that it would appear that the worst part of the war is over, and let's hope that there will be a very, very few more casualties, and of course that these young men are going to be allowed to come home. I'm very pessimistic about that, but at least hopefully the worst of the fighting is over, and the back of the Iraqi resistance has been broken.
Amen.
But let's get into Vietnam, because it's so difficult for people to understand what's going on today unless they can understand Vietnam.
And I arrived.
Go ahead. Excuse me.
I arrived in country, actually flew into Saigon on the 22nd day of December 1965, and the day before Christmas, Colonel William Tuttle, who was the commander of all special forces in the 4th Tactical Corps of Vietnam, asked me if I would volunteer to take a top-secret independent operation, which included 30 kilometers of border with Cambodia and the district of An Phu, Vietnam, which was comprised of 64,000 people of the Hoa Hao sect of the Buddhist religion, the most wonderful people I've ever met in my life. And we would be the first to go take the war to Cambodia into the sanctuaries that our president had authorized the enemy. And this was, I arrived in my camp, first of all, I accepted the mission, and I accepted it with the knowledge, Colonel Tuttle telling me that if we were caught inside Cambodia, there would be no air support, no artillery support, and not even medical evacuation. It would be as if we deserted and left the country and they wouldn't claim us at all. Colonel Tuttle told me when I left his office that it would be as if he never talked to me that day. So it was a completely independent operation. And we did. We secured the border. All of my men that on the A-team were hand-selected by me, the Americans. There was a Vietnamese A-team, and then we had 692 Hoa Hao irregulars, and plus we had some regional forces, two companies of regional forces, and the Home Guard there.
Now, of course, I think for our listeners, they have to understand that the Special Forces are an elite group. And here, Colonel Marvin had somewhere between 8 and 11 of his own men.
Yes.
And then, of course, he had certainly the South Vietnamese, and then he had, of course, the irregulars from the Waha people.
Right.
So he had, a fair number of men under his control, and their job was to secure that area and protect the people from the Viet Cong who would come in and kill the villagers. To try to force them into opposition to the Americans. Would that be a fair statement?
Amen. Amen. I know one time the VC came in at night to terrorize one of the hamlets, and they took the hamlet chief, and they dug a hole that was just deep enough so he could stand in it up to his neck. And then they filled that hole in so only his head was shown above the ground, and all the villagers were all gathered around there, the hamlet people, maybe 300 or 400 people, and then the person that the VC had chosen to take his place, they put behind an oxen with a razor-sharp plow blade, and he plowed his hamlet chief's head off, thereby becoming the hamlet chief. But that's the way that the VC operated. They didn't operate humanely at all.
All right, fine. And so
we cleared them out, and we had the area secure. When we turned it over to regional forces in 1966, we had the most secure area that I know of in South Vietnam.
All right, now then, of course, you were able to go into Cambodia, and you actually, of course, the American people were never told that we were sending special forces in there, but you would go in and then just clear out nests of the Viet Cong.
Yes, and we could not even report it on our monthly reports, couldn't even take credit for those enemy that we've killed. It was a very strange war. And one of the strangest parts was on the 10th day of June in 1966 when CIA agent Walter McKim came to my camp with a portfolio of information and maps, include all kinds of maps, and a request of us, Major Foy Van Lee and myself, he was my counterpart, to train a group of our men and to go into Cambodia equipped and dressed as if we were VC and kill Prince Sihanouk. And I accepted the mission. That's what we were trained to do, those kind of things. But I did it with a quid pro quo, that President Johnson would have to stop the sanctuaries, and he'd have to tell the American people that he eliminated the enemy sanctuaries. And it turns out that he would not do that. President Johnson didn't like the Green Berets anyway, so maybe he just wanted to sacrifice us. I do not know. But so when he did not do that, then I refused the mission, and I made the CIA very angry at myself and my men. And within days, they sent, I kicked the CIA agent out of our camp, and he told me, he says, you can't fight the company because you can't win. And within days, they'd sent an entire Arvin regiment to attack my camp.
Now, by Arvin, you mean a South Vietnamese regiment?
South Vietnamese regiment, about 1,500 men with armored personnel carriers, 105 howitzers, all the kinds of things we didn't have.
And, of course, they were going to kill you and your men because, of course, they didn't want you around since you had refused the mission.
That's right.
I think it's very difficult for the American people to believe that the CIA would kill Americans. But this is the sort of thing that really went on over there for people who tried to fight the company of the CIA. Is that true?
Amen. The movie Apocalypse Now is actually based on a true story.
Why did you tell that? Because I think it's so important for our listeners who did not see Apocalypse Now. There was a story supposedly of a renegade American Army officer played by Marlon Brando, who had gone into, as I remember, Cambodia. And there, of course, according to the story, he had cleaned out a lot of the Viet Cong. And he and his fighters had a profound impact on that area and just simply done away with the enemy. And so the United States sent a couple of our people in to kill this very effective fighter for our side. The idea being he was a renegade, he'd gone mad, he was killing everybody in sight. But what was the true story about Apocalypse Now, or the similarity of a very similar story?
True story is a young lieutenant colonel headed up a very special A-team, a reinforced A-team, and they sent him down to the Cao Mau Peninsula of Vietnam. And there he met with Father Wah, who was the head of the Catholic mercenaries in that area. And they trained and equipped and paid Father Wah and his men as civilian irregular defense group fighters, and they actually cleared the Viet Cong out of the Cao Mau Peninsula. They did the same kind of work that we did in An Phu, and they did a beautiful job. But it got to the point, for some stupid reason, the government or the CIA got the feeling that the Catholics were getting too strong and that they might attempt to take over the Saigon government. So they ordered our A-team out of there. And every man on that A-team except the colonel left and went back as they were ordered to do. Like in my case, we were all ordered out and all my men stayed with me. Thank God for that. But anyway, then, so he was there all by himself down the Cao Mau Peninsula with these Catholic mercenaries. And they sent two other Green Berets down there and terminated him.
In other words, they sent in Green Berets to kill one of our officers because he wanted to try to win the war.
Yeah, he was doing his job. He was doing his job.
No, of course.
Now, in my case, when that regiment was within 2 minutes of us and we had, through Wahao channels, asked for General Quang Van Dang, who was the commanding general of 4th Corps, to intercede, he did, and he came in American Colonel William Desabree's helicopter, and he flew over the regiment, which was within 2 minutes of attacking our camp, and Colonel Desabree radioed down and asked the American advisors, there was a captain and some sergeants with him, why they were coming to attack An Phu, and they told him that there was a renegade captain named Marvin that was leading the Wahaos against the Saigon government.
And, of course, this is what they did. They would lie to people to get American to kill American, or at least supervise
right.
the killing of Americans. And you have to understand, this is how the CIA works. It kills government leaders, and we know that it killed Patrice Lumumba in Nigeria. It supervised the killing of the Trujillo, and certainly in the Dominican Republic. It was involved with the killing of Diem and Nu and and if any of you have any doubt that the CIA was intimately involved with the murder of an American president, we have a book written based upon the papers that were given by a former director or assistant director of clandestine operations for the CIA, Mr. Robert Crowley. They were given to a friend of mine, Mr. Gregory Douglas, before he died. And the book Redecide not only tells you how and why the CIA killed President Kennedy, it lists 4,000 assets or people who were well known to the CIA that they felt they could call on, or Mr. Crowley felt he could call on. Many of them, of course, are in key positions in the media today, and that book is called Redecide. If you need more information about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Now, Colonel...
That really sounds like a winner, I'll tell you, Dr. Stan, because I know in talking with Fletcher Prouty before he died, he and I were going to collaborate on a book to warn the American people about the gradual control of the media by our government.
Now, of course, Colonel Fletcher Prouty was the military liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the Kennedy assassination. And, of course, he was immortalized in Oliver Stone's picture,
yes.
JFK. He was the colonel who sat on the beach with bench with Jim Garrison and told him, keep up the investigation because there was a conspiracy.
Amen.
Behind the murder of the American president. You knew Colonel Prouty?
Yes. Well, I never visited him. I don't visit much of anybody, but we talked together over the phone and corresponded back and forth to try and get to the bottom of this thing.
Well, I think we're pretty well have the answer as to who and why President Kennedy was killed, because the papers, Mr. Crowley actually, pardon me, Mr. Douglas actually has the papers, and if you read the book, in fact, remind me and I'll just send you a copy of that. I think it's a very important book. You'll be fascinated by it. Now, Colonel Marvin is writing a book. It's called, what, The Expendable Elite?
Right. It's being printed as we speak, and it'll be available on the bookshelves in the first week of May. It can be ordered now through either through expendableelite.com or through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or what's the other big one? I can't remember right now.
All right, well, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, the Borders.
Borders, right.
Now, of course, the website is www.expendableelite.com, and you'll find all sorts of material up there that Colonel Marvin has written. Let me suggest you go. It's well-written, a fascinating material, and it's the sort of material that you need to help you expose what's going on to other people. Colonel Marvin's very, very courageous to speak out. His life been threatened. What did they threaten to do to your grandchildren?
Well, the senior staffer of a congressman, U.S. congressman, called my wife and told her to tell your husband to remember that he may not be afraid of anybody but Jesus Christ. Remind him that he has grandchildren.
And this is the sort of thing that they do. I know other people who've had the same and similar type of threats to silence them here in America. One of them was a Special Forces man who had put up a number of notations on the internet about how when he was in the Special Forces under certain circumstances, when a whole unit was going to be wiped out, they'd used a certain type of a poison gas to protect the men. I mean, you're in war, you want to protect your men. But of course, he was eventually told, you get that down off the internet, you deny, you're saying that, because we know your grandchildren are. This is what's done in America today. I'm not talking about something imaginary. I've heard these stories over and over again.
Well, I called to talk to one of my men. It was on my A-team whose lives, our lives were saved by General Dang, just to try and get him to call General Dang and thank him for saving his life. And I got his wife on the phone, and she said that she had a call from somebody in the Pentagon and told her that if her husband talked to me one more time, they'd lose their retirement pay. Now, they can't do that, but she was scared enough, so he's never talked to me since then.
Well, of course, you've got many of your men in your unit to have taped interviews and signed affidavits.
Amen.
But they've all been intimidated and told not to tell about this because, of course, you're not supposed to know that your CIA goes around assassinating world leaders, are you? And world leaders are being assassinated all the time, and gee, we can never figure out where they are or what happened to Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and the point we're trying to make is that things are never as they appear to be, as we always start our programs. Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I mean, the American people have so little knowledge of what's really going on. That's really what's almost painful. You know, I wonder how many Americans know that at the end of the Second World War, why Heinrich Mueller, the head of the German Gestapo, was brought to the United States and given a plus job working for the CIA. This is the head of the German Gestapo. Many of the Nazi war criminals who'd committed horrible atrocities were actually allowed to come to the United States and given good government jobs so they could continue their macabre experiments right here in the United States, and that's covered certainly in the book Bluebird, written by a psychiatrist, which we carry. But so much of this information just is never talked about. Because, you see, there is the good and the evil. And, of course, when the good people won't stand against the evil, why, the evil people win. Now, you at another time were actually assigned to go to Thailand. What was that all about?
Well, I volunteered to go to Thailand. They said there was some trouble there, and that's, I always liked to go where there was some action, where I could help out. And the day that I arrived at the 46th Special Forces in Thailand in 1967, I found that they were trying to, that they, a young captain that was in that outfit, who I was replacing as a logistics officer, was in the process of taking a box to the post office over there, the International Post Office. And I asked him, I said, "What's in that box?" And he wouldn't answer me. So I just got my knife out and I cut it open, and there was a M1D sniper rifle in there, plus a couple of carbines. And so I stopped that, and it turned out, I started an investigation right away. The commanding officer would not do the investigation, and it turns out that I'm very firm belief that he was involved in the whole mess, in order that what they were doing was getting weapons from Vietnam, American weapons, that had been captured by the enemy and then recaptured by our people, so they're off the books, sending them to the 46th Special Forces in Thailand. There they'd be boxed and shipped by U.S. mail, by international mail, to Detroit, Michigan, and it was part, we believe, of the program that General Yarbrough was heading as Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence in the Pentagon to infiltrate the black militant black units, because it's a lot easier to infiltrate when you've got something to offer.
Now, these were the Black Panthers you're speaking of, or what?
Yes. And there was a total of 120 I was able to find numbers on weapons that had been shipped out before I stopped them.
Now, were these people operating with the knowledge of the CIA, or were they operating with the knowledge of the Defense Department, or who was really behind shipping these weapons to the Black Panthers?
I'll have to, myself, I assume it was part of the whole thing, the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. William Pepper, who wrote the book, Orders to Kill, tells of Green Berets being involved, two detachments being involved, as groups of people that would monitor all of Martin Luther King Jr.'s movements. And they were actually told that day in Memphis that if the shooter missed, they were to shoot to kill. That was where the title comes from on his book, Orders to Kill. And he had personally talked with two sergeants.
We're going to be right back here in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our special guest today, this evening, is Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, and we're talking about his experiences working within the Special Forces, which really, of course, many times were involved in a cult and certainly in illegal activities. In fact, as you remember, a man named Timothy McVeigh had been joined the Special Forces, and then supposedly he didn't qualify. But he wrote a letter to his sister, and he said he was involved with a Special Army unit that was involved in illegal activity. Now, you never heard that when Timothy McVeigh's trial was opened in Denver, Colorado. That was the first thing that the defense attorney, Stephen Jones, brought out, and that's brought out in the book The Others Unknown. By Stephen Jones, actually, there are two of them, by two books by that title, but this is the second one. I think the OK bombing conspiracy was the title. Others Unknown, the Oklahoma City bombing conspiracy. But he will tell you that this is what Timothy McVeigh said. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but certainly some of these Special Forces units did get involved in illegal activity, didn't they, even here in the United States?
Yes. Well, I can tell you this, that if you're assigned, first of all, you volunteer for all covert operations are volunteer. If you volunteer for a mission like the federal building there in Utah, you would be dropped from the rolls, and you'd just be picked up under a different name, and so that you couldn't be tagged to the United States Army if you were caught.
You mean, of course, the Oklahoma City bombing, the
right.
Federal building there in Oklahoma City.
Right.
It's not simply by accident. He was repeatedly visited by a CIA psychiatrist named Jocelyn West, and that's another subject.
It's interesting, too, in that federal building, the thing that I believe, and others that have had the same training in what we called a dust initiator bomb, that's what blew up that building. And it's interesting that there were no FBI agents in their offices in that building that day. I believe that we did that. It's a shame, but we do a lot of shameful things.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Martin Luther King, as I know you've been very interested in that. I think what most of our listeners do not know is about the trial that was held at the behest of the King family, where they charged the United States government was involved in a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King. And where was that trial actually held?
It was in Memphis.
And it killed in Memphis, and of course, the media knew all about it. I mean, it was a public trial. Was it a federal trial or a state trial, do you recall?
I don't know.
Anyway, of course, and what was the outcome of the trial? What did the jury decide when they heard the evidence about government involvement in the murder of Martin Luther King?
Well, the jury found the government complicit in the murder of Martin Luther King, Jr.
And how was that?
And the U.S. military.
And how was that blocked out across America?
It wasn't. There's only two people left there through the whole trial. And one of them was a friend of mine named Jim Douglas. And he stayed for the whole trial. And he said just after the first day when the hot information started coming out, the people from the major media just disappeared.
No kidding. I mean, they just all left, and I bet they even took with them the video cameras and other things, so that they weren't going to talk about this, because the last thing they want is the American people to understand how things really work. Not the idealism that we've been brought up with, but the reality of the fact that there really are some wicked people there. And Martin Luther King was becoming a liability. Oh, he'd gotten the civil rights legislation passed, but now, of course, he was coming out against the Vietnam War, and they wanted to continue the Vietnam War a little bit longer. It hadn't served its full purpose. They hadn't been able to get in all the legislation at home, all the new socialist programs that the Vietnam War was a cover for, and so Martin Luther King was terminated. Now, tell me about these special forces units that were there. Mm-hmm. They were actually watching and monitoring Martin Luther King?
Yes. By the way, that court was the Shelby County Court in Tennessee. And it was on December the 8th, 1999, they reached that verdict. And then 21 months later, the Justice Department investigation and the new evidence implicating, I'm reading now from Jim Douglas, implicating the U.S. government and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., has concluded, this is the Justice Department, that none of the witnesses are credible and that James Earl Ray was the lone assassin.
And yet, of course, they could never identify the ballistics on the bullet. You know, they tried over and over and over again. They said, oh, it sucks, we just can't decide whether this is the gun that did it or not. Now, if anybody believes that, why, they've got to be incredibly naive. How could you admit that the gun that everybody said that Martin Luther King had used to kill, but that James Earl Ray had used to kill Martin Luther King wasn't the gun that actually killed him? So we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this evening is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, who was with the Special Forces. He's retired from the military now, and he's trying to tell the American people what he learned during this period of time, and making great personal sacrifice to bring the truth out for the American people. If you're out there in the listening audience, I would love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I really think that we actually still have some copies of that book, Orders to Kill, by, what was his name, Pepper?
William Pepper. And then he's got a brand new one out this year, 2003. Let me see, the title to that is An Act of State. And it goes deeper into how the Special Forces were involved in that. And what it was, two A teams, and two of the sergeants talked to him personally and told him, and now they're hiding out in South America under assumed names.
Well, actually, you know, there were a couple of people with the Special Forces who would actually talk to people who were actually interviewed in one of the films on what happened at Waco. And there were special forces there, and they were sent in to kill the people of Waco.
That was a terrible thing.
And of course, I believe those special forces were sent on another mission and never came back. But there were people who talked to them before they went. And of course, that's all included in one of the films we have, not Waco, the Rules of Engagement, but the second film on Waco that was put out. And the special forces were sent in to kill the people there. But of course,
there's a book, too, called Spooky 8 by Bob King.
Spooky 8? Tell me about that.
And it tells a story about black operations and how they tried to dispose of the people once they finished the operation.
In other words, after the special forces had completed the operation, then they got rid of them as well?
Right.
Well, that's actually what happened to the assassins of President Kennedy. There were four of them. They were all supposed to be flown out by David Perry, who was, of course, part of the unit there, the group in New Orleans. But one of them, of course, the shooter, figured that this might be a one-way trip. And so he disappeared. The other three got on the plane with David Perry and were never seen again.
Now, isn't that interesting? That's the first time I heard that. And while we were in training at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to be Green Beret officers, the CIA briefed us on that assassination, and they told us there was four shooters. Two of them were there. One was behind the fence up there, and one was on the roof of the building that comes up to the building that Oswald was found in. And the other two were, one was on each route to the hospital from that area, and their orders were, this is what the CIA instructors told us, their orders were they had a spotter with them to spot and see if President Kennedy was still alive to finish him off.
Well, unfortunately, this is the reality of what happens, and I wish it weren't so. I wish we're history as we believe it, and it can only be when the good people of America are willing to take a stand against those evil forces that have been here since the beginning of this nation. But they were never really predominant until, of course, after the Second World War, when, of course, they took control of our courts and they took control of so much of our society. And for our listeners out there, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to, because it will give you an idea of the spiritual forces that energized the people who took control of our courts, who took control of our government, who took control of both political parties. And it's about time the good people took a stand while we still can, to take America back and preserve the heritage of freedom that we inherited from generations past.
That's right.
Well, Colonel, so basically during this trial, the jury found that the government was complicit and these military units were complicit in the murder of Martin Luther King?
That's exactly right.
And that's covered in the book Orders to Kill by William Pepper?
Right, and an act of state, which is his 2003 one in more detail.
All right, fine. Well, I will try to, I'll give you a call off the air, and do you have his telephone number? I'd love to get him on one of my programs.
Oh, I'll get it for you.
And what was that other gentleman that you said who sat through the entire trial?
Jim Douglas.
Jim Douglas.
Yeah, I'll get you his, too.
Because, of course,
I'll send that to you by email as soon as we're done.
All right, fine. And you have the email to send it to, and I really appreciate that so much. For if you're out there in the listening audience and you say, well, I don't believe this is true, well, you need to get some of the material that the Colonel has. Go to his website. That's the Expendable Elite. The www.expendableelite.com. And you'll find fascinating material there that will give you a tremendous insight into some of the things that really have gone on, some of the things that happened in Vietnam, and most of these things that he personally experienced while serving in the military.
Yeah, the latest parts in ExpendableLead.com is something that I'm carrying on now that I told you earlier that Fletcher Prouty and I talked about. And that's trying to get into this whole deal of how our government is controlling the media. And it sure is proving to be a fact right in that forum. And you can read that. And I would suggest that the listeners go into that, expendableelite.com, and if they see a subject that they think it would be worthwhile for you to do, and they could suggest it to you.
All right, fine. Well, of course, what sort of things are you actually covering there? How is the media controlled today? in your opinion?
Well, that's I can't get into that right now.
All right,
it'd
fine.
Be too lengthy.
But all right, fine.
It's just that they've gradually taken over, and yet they've left enough of what they call a liberal slant, so that we pay more attention to what we think the liberals are doing in the media when it's really the government's controlling. And my main point is, there's one of the parts in here is about the Aswan High Dam, and I.
Why don't we tell us a little bit, because you were actually trained in the use of small
portable atomic bombs.
Nuclear bombs, right?
Right. And one of my contingency missions was the hydroelectric plant in the Aswan High Dam. At the time, the Russians were building it. This was in 64. And in fact, the Mafia construction company from the United States, under the payment of the CIA, was over there helping the Russians build a dam so they could get intelligence to send back to us to use, so I'd know exactly where to put that portable atomic bomb. And I have, once September 11th came on, and they destroyed those two buildings and killed all those people, I right away contacted Governor Ridge and advised him to put a close hold on all of those atomic weapons. And I never heard back from him.
Now, what
a copy of the George Bush.
What atomic weapons are you speaking of?
These are the Special Atomic Demolition Munitions, the SATEMs.
This was I've never even heard of this. Was this something you were trained in?
Yes. Oh, yeah, this is the bomb that we were going to use in the Aswan High Dam. If you go, there's all about it in my website, to save some time today. There was 4 6-man teams, 24 people, plus we had 8 extra. A civilian came down from Seneca Army Depot, where they were stored, and trained us in the use of these atomic weapons. There was 2 parts to them. I, as a team leader, carried the bomb, which was 90-some pounds, and my executive officer carried the trigger, which was, I think, 35 or 40 pounds. And oddly enough, it was brand new in those days, and the timer on it was from a washing machine, a Sears washing machine.
And, of course, but you were never actually ordered then to actually place the place the bombs.
No.
Why did
there is a movie being written about that, too.
Why did they want to actually destroy the, even consider destroying the Aswan Dam? Certainly, that was a wonderful thing because it stopped the recurrent flooding in the Nile. They had more or less a constant flow of water. And then, of course, it was a wonderful source of electricity for Egypt because of the power plants.
Well, I guess we weren't too friendly with them at the time. And later on, in years that passed, when, especially after I got saved, and I thought back to what if we had been asked to do that, and we dropped in and put that thing there after the dam was in operation, that would have poisoned all of that water going down that river.
And, of course, it would have washed away most of the people of Egypt because most of them live, right along the...
It wouldn't have washed away anybody because it was just a hydroelectric plant.
You're just going to blow up the plant. You're working.
Yeah, that's
the
a
dam.
Small bomb.
Okay.
Right.
All right, fine.
That was our main thing, was to destroy the electrical output and poison the water.
Okay, then you weren't actually going to blow up the dam itself.
No, we couldn't carry anything that big in.
All right.
Right.
All right, fine. And so, of course, these are the sorts of games that are played all the time. That time, I think that Nasser was in charge of Egypt, and he was very, very popular. And, of course, it was Nasser who nationalized the Suez Canal, or had nationalized the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were going to teach him a lesson. Now, and then, of course, Nasser joined together Egypt and Syria, and they had sort of one big alliance there, bridging the area on one side of Israel. And then I forgot, of course, eventually Nasser, I forgot whether he died or was he died or was he assassinated?
Who's this, Nasser?
Nasser, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, he was extremely popular, a very, very popular Egyptian leader who deposed King Farouk, and then Nasser disappears. And then after that, of course, you have one after another leader, none of them liked by the Egyptian people, but we have kept these really dictators in power. Oh, they have elections, but they don't allow any opposition. So the man we back always gets 99.5% of the vote, something like that, and everybody calls that Arab democracy.
Right.
Now over in Algeria, where, of course, they held elections, and the Islamic fundamentalists won the elections, why the military, of course, refused to turn over power, and we backed them. We want democracy as long as, of course, the people we back get elected.
Right.
And when they don't, why, we back the military to establish a dictatorship and then, of course, arrest or kill the opposition.
I think I can answer your question here a little bit more. I just pulled up on the screen the third part that's going into this government control of the media. On this whole thing about the security threats, and this is a tremendous security threat. Can you imagine two people can carry this bomb and they could destroy a number of buildings with it? But anyway, the last step I did was to send off to Governor Tom Ridge again. And then all along, I've also gone to Congressman Bollert, Senator Clinton, Fox Broadcasting, National Public Radio, New York Times, John Scanlon, the Director of Office of Public Security for New York State, the Syracuse Herald American, and Time Magazine, just so I could have a broad range of all the important media to this area and nationally. Not a one of them has responded.
Well, now, basically, where are these small nuclear weapons kept?
Well, now, that's interesting, because they had a Talk of the Nation program on National Public Radio, and on there, this was about 6 months ago, I think, was one of the representatives of our Atomic Energy Commission, not Atomic Energy, within the Defense Department on atomic weapons. And I was listening on, and all of a sudden he comes up and he says that somebody asked a question about what about the bombs, the atomic weapons that we've decreased the arsenal, how did you destroy them? He says, we never destroy an atomic weapon. We just put them in safekeeping where they can't be used. So I called in, and luckily I got in, and I asked him about the SATM. And this thing is listed in the unclassified publication, Joint Chiefs of Staff Pub 1. It tells all about that, the definition for it and everything. And I said, where are these stored then? There used to be your Seneca Army depots closed. I said, you should put a close hold on these things, because terrorists can get them. He says, oh, we destroyed them. He just contradicted himself. But they cut me off then on the radio.
All right, fine. Now, is this what they call a suitcase bomb?
Well, the Russians was a suitcase bomb. Ours was a SATM. And I don't know if it could have fit in a suitcase. I don't think so. It went in what we call a parachutist adjustable equipment bag, a PAE bag.
All right, fine. So these are certainly
only the Green Berets knew about them.
All right, fine. Well, these are certainly out there, and they can be used at any time. And my fear is that we're moving into very, very uncertain times, and I believe that the Third World War has already begun. Now, not because I'm very, very smart, but the head of the Israeli Mossad was on 60 Minutes 2 9 days ago, a week ago Wednesday. 60 Minutes 2, we have the transcript, and the head of the Israeli Mossad said September 11th was the beginning of World War III. Just within the last 10 days, James Woolsey, a member of this project for the New American Century Group we've talked so much about.
Yes.
James Woolsey, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. James Woolsey, former director of the CIA, said, we are now in World War IV. Now, whether we call it World War III or World War IV, it really doesn't matter to me. But I think that we're moving into terrible, difficult times, and I think the American people have to know, and at least those who will listen and will hear and can help us to get the word out.
Amen.
Need to understand that behind what's going on from a geopolitical point of view is a spiritual battle. And I believe that God punishes nations that have turned against him. And is there anybody out there in the listening audience who is a Christian who does not honestly believe that God, if he is a just God, is going to turn against America because we have rejected him and the church has allowed, God to be excluded from our schools and prayer to be excluded from our schools? And yet, you know, of course, they say, well, I know, but and we teach about it in church. Well, why aren't the churches, of course, establishing schools for our children? Why are we sending Christian children to schools and universities where their faith is destroyed?
That's right. And the Bible goes out, the devil goes in.
Amen to that. And that's exactly what's going on today. Well, really, the thing that it convinced you, you wanted to really come forward with the truth about what you'd done, was because of your Christian conversion?
On the 29th day of January, 1984, my youngest daughter led me to the Lord Jesus Christ. That day, I knew the fear of the Lord, and I completely threw out the window the fear of our government, the fear of people like me, who worked for them doing dastardly deeds. And that's when I started to put together my book, and I had very fortunately, when I was in Vietnam, knowing that they could turn against me, because we knew that, I had sent through Vietnamese mail channels back to a friend of mine at Fort Bragg notes every day on our operations and what we were doing and what I was told. And so I had all that available to me when I got home. And I started putting that all that stuff, and then I met with my men, got their cooperation either on audio tape or in writing, and General Dang and Major Foy Van Lee later on, and that's when I was able to put the book together.
Okay, and of course, if you had actually, of course, gone ahead and killed Prince Sihanouk, you probably would have been killed yourself, wouldn't you?
Well, they would have tried.
All right, well, let's go to Ron. He's calling from Richland, Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm really enjoying listening to your guest, and just from the little I had read about Office of Strategic Services during World War II, and Wild Bill Donovan, and Bill Casey, and that, nothing is too far-fetched.
Well, if you haven't read, of course, the book Double Cross, it's written by the brother, the head of the Mafia, who will tell you that the Mafia and the CIA work together. And then, of course, that's called Double Cross. We have that. We have a book.
I know that for a fact.
Of the dereliction of duty. It goes into how the FBI works with the Mafia and how they actually sent people that they knew were innocent to jail to cover for their Mafia killers and torturers. And one of their people, a Whitey Bulger, is still out there. They let him get away after killing 20 people while he was under control, under the protection of the FBI. An amazing, amazing story. And, of course, then I'm really looking forward, of course, to Colonel Marvin's book. We do carry the book, certainly, Regicide, going into the background of the murder of the American president, based upon the papers that were left to Gregory Douglas by the head of the covert operations of the CIA, Mr. Robert Crowley. So all of this is available, Ron, and we need to have you help us get this information out. We've got to get the good people in America to understand the forces of darkness that do exist and are working in our society.
Did he have a question?
Well, yes, sir, about William Colby. You know anything about...
Well, William Colby, I had to go against him because he had gone before Congress and told Congress that General Quang Van Dang, the one who saved our lives from the CIA's regiment that sent after us, he told the Congress that General Quang Van Dang was in charge of the Phoenix program and that he was personally responsible for the deaths of 20,000 Vietnamese. So I finally got John Tilton, a very courageous man who actually headed up the entire Phoenix program for the American side, and he testified in writing to me that General Dang had absolutely nothing to do with the Phoenix program.
Colby was in charge of the Phoenix program, wasn't he?
Yes.
Sure he was. Yep. But
he died under very mysterious circumstances.
Yes, he did. I think maybe because of McNamara coming forward, he was thinking about it.
I don't know. Do you think the CIA got him?
Yep.
I mean, remember here, you know, he...
I think they got Casey, too, but we just don't know how.
Right, I remember...
Yeah, but he was an old man, though.
Yep, I know it.
Okay, anything else?
Old men still speak. I'm not young.
Oh, I know, but did he die of natural causes? Not Colby, but Bill Casey.
Casey supposedly died of a lymphoma of the brain. We don't know, but that was the story that was given at the time.
Well, by the way, I appreciate you getting the truth out. And what makes America great is Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And we have to be honest and law-abiding.
Amen.
And truthful.
Amen.
And we have to put the needs of others ahead of ourselves, and we can maybe get this country back.
That's right. We have to have faith that he can help us on this situation, guide and direct us.
Oh, we'll take divine intervention now.
Amen.
Well, of course, it always...
We need a revival, don't we?
We sure do.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Keep up the good work.
God bless you. Thanks
God
so much.
God bless you.
Okay, and if you're out there, we've got time for another couple of questions. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is current Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. His book, Expendable Elite, and you can order that right now from Borders or from Barnes & Noble or from Amazon.com. And, of course...
if they want a signed copy, they can order it over that website.
Okay, fine. So you go to expendableelite.com. That's www.expendableelite.com. It's a beautiful website, very, very professionally done. A lot of great, great stories there of the things that Colonel Marvin did while he was in Special Forces, where he was working as, really, in many ways, in some instances, an assassin for the federal government. But that's what the Special Forces do. And, of course, many of them have been operating over in Iraq behind the scenes, operating in western Iraq long before the rest of the forces came in. But they are very unusual men. They're trained how to live off the land and extremely capable, aren't they?
Amen. That's what it's a shame that they're used for illegal things, because they are the best group of men, the most courageous, best trained you could ever run across. I thank the good Lord for the blessing of being a part of them for 6.5 years.
And of course, all of your men have been warned not to validate the story that
everyone.
And they've really been threatened if they would come forward.
Yep.
Now I understand that they're talking about making a motion picture out of your experiences.
Yes. Oh yes. Bob Logan bought the rights. I met him at a motel in Vermont. He and my wife, and his wife, we all met. And he bought the rights on it, and he's written a screenplay on it. He's already been given a threat by the head of the Special Forces Association that if he were to go ahead with it, that there would be serious repercussions. I've got that in quotes.
All right.
Well, but he's going to go ahead with it.
All right, fine. Well, I will hope that he can, of course, put it together and to get some good actors. And really, these are the stories that people need to hear, not the some of the superficial, fluffy stories we get out of Hollywood, but the reality of what this is all about. And, of course, how good men have been recruited for evil purposes.
Yeah.
But, of course, when they do these things, they really think that they're fighting for God and country. I don't think that the average American who was involved with the Phoenix Project that killed over somewhere between 20 and 40,000 of the South Vietnamese who were suspected of being Viet Cong sympathizers, I think that the average person involved, the average military person, really believed that this was important to do away with the opposition in the community against our efforts to maintain freedom for the people of South Vietnam.
Right.
They didn't understand. We were never there to maintain freedom. We never tried to win the war. We weren't there fighting communism. We were financing communism during the whole time, through our aid to the Russians, who were aiding the North Vietnamese. And have you ever read the rules of engagement, Colonel, the restrictions that were placed on our fighting men over in Vietnam?
Well, no, because we didn't have any rules of engagement in Special Forces.
Well, you were lucky, because I'll tell you, as far as the Army and the Navy and the regular forces, the rules of engagement meant you can't win. You're here, you can bleed and fight and suffer and die, but you can't win.
It's kind of like they gave us permission to go across the border into Cambodia. Major Foy Van Lee had pushed that and got that approval, but then they wouldn't give us any support. And, I mean, the enemy outnumbered us between 4-1 and 6-1, depending on what time of the year it was. So, I mean, they had us there where they wanted us.
Well, how were you able to get the best of the Viet Cong? Because they were
because we had the best fighters. The Hoa Haos are the finest group of people. A lot of them have come over here. I've helped some of them. And a lot of them have become born-again Christians.
Well,
they lived the life that a born-again Christian should.
Well, I'm sure they were very, very courageous people.
Amen.
And I'm sure many of them, of course, because they did support the Americans there, were sent to concentration camps after we betrayed the South Vietnamese people.
Major Lee ended up 13 years in prison before I could finally get him into this country.
And he finally did get in here, right?
Yep. Yeah, against the best wishes or worst wishes of Henry Kissinger, who personally tried to keep him out. But two ladies, I'm trying to get permission to use their names, but I can understand why they don't want them used, fought that whole system. One of them, a doctor, actually met Major Foy Van Lee in Vietnam to make sure that he could get to this country.
All right, fine. Well, there are a lot of courageous people, a lot of wonderful
Amen.
Stories. But the American people want to forget Vietnam. They want to think nice things. But if we don't learn the lessons of Vietnam, then we ensure that there will be other similar battles
That's
in the future.
Right.
Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners this evening?
Well, my most important desire really is that we all pray for the strength to help turn this thing around, and that we all pray for those that are in the battle right now that are trying to get the truth out, and that we do what we can to support people like yourself and Pastor Paul and people like you who are trying to get the message out that's true and correct, and keep praying.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Colonel.
I we'll
look
you,
forward
sir.
To having you on our other programs in the very near future.
You take care now.
Well, good night. God bless you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're really privileged to have people like Lieutenant Colonel Marvin, who's risking his life to get this information out. And if you really don't think that they will eliminate people in America who tell the truth, you're really very naive about what's going on. Well, it's time to come out of your cocoon and face the life that it is. We're involved in the battle between good and evil, that eternal conspiracy against God. And of course, we hope that many of you will join with us at Radio Liberty in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived unto God as a Christian nation can long endure. And it will be lost if the good people won't take a stand. And so please pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for, and I'm talking about the good leaders. Pray for our forces over in the Middle East. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter or other information. And so until Monday, may the Lord be with you. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, of course, we have with us on the line from Southern California, Barbara Cole. Hi, Barbara. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing just fine, and thank you for having me.
Well, Barbara's on the front lines of this battle, the immigration battle. Now, everybody knows that we're in war with terrorism, whatever that is. I mean, ordinarily you're in war with a country, but no, we're at war with terrorism. And, of course, the leader of the terrorist movement is the wicked Osama bin Laden, and we just can never find him. In fact, he's recently put out a new edict telling Muslims throughout the world to become suicide bombers, attacking our forces in the Middle East, attacking Americans throughout the world, attacking Americans right here in this country. The last 2 days, a new tape from Osama bin Laden telling Muslims throughout the world that this is how they're going to defeat the wicked Christians here in the United States. The only problem is that time and time and time again, our forces had the opportunity to take out Osama bin Laden, and they weren't allowed to do it. The question has to be asked, why was that? It's sort of like the wicked Saddam Hussein. See, we just can't find Saddam, but and we can't find any of those weapons of mass destruction, but we know they were there, and they're going to be used against us at any time, but we just haven't been able to find them. We can talk about so many things that go on, nothing as it appears to be. I mean, there were so many of the very, very economical weapons that could have been used against our helicopters, against our forces, and none of them were used. None of the bridges were taken out on the way into Baghdad. None of the airports were blown up. Very few of the oil wells were set afire. The major waterways were not blocked, or certainly the dams weren't blow up and flood the desert. Nothing was done. It was almost as if they were preparing the path to make it look good, so the blitzkrieg that Donald Rumsfeld or the PNAC group had advocated over the objection of the generals, that Donald Rumsfeld turned out to know just how to fight wars, and the generals really didn't. Illusion is usually king. Reality is usually scoffed at. Well, the same thing holds true with our borders. Here, we're involved in a battle against terrorism, and yet they refuse to seal our borders. We're concerned about the terrorists, and yet the administration is doing everything, despite the fact that Congress voted for legislation to allow airline pilots to have guns and arm themselves, why the president has made it so difficult that nobody, none of the airline pilots, have armed themselves. Why? Because they don't want them to arm themselves. They're not really interested in protecting the American people. You have to give the impression you are. So you let the legislation go through when you see you can't stop it. And then, of course, you put in a bureaucratic regulations so that the pilots have to have more psychological evaluations and do this and that. And the other thing, eventually they sort of give up and say, well, gee, maybe it isn't really worth carrying a gun. Obviously, they don't want the pilots armed. But the biggest thing right now is, if there really are Islamic terrorists in the world trying to get into America, why haven't we sealed our borders and kept them and all of the illegal aliens out of the United States? What is being done? What has the administration done since the terrorist attack on 9/11 to seal our borders and protect the American people, Barbara?
Absolutely zero when you come to the bottom line, Dr. Stan. Homeland Security, quote, is nothing but another bad joke on American people who are following the lead of what I consider to be a very evil leader down the road to self-destruction. In fact, the head of Homeland Security has publicly stated that our borders cannot be secured for political and cultural reasons.
Well, then, if they can't be secured for political and cultural reasons, why is it we can have sent our troops over to guard the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan? So we can guard other people's borders, but not our own?
Absolutely. And you just answered the ultimate question of this overall fiasco of the quote, which was purportedly the reason for going into Iraq, was to ensure that those weapons of mass destruction were never used. And just like you said, Dr. Stan, isn't that interesting that not one was used to defeat the American troops who went in? Now, two things, either they weren't there, as President Bush so decreed that they were, he and his cohorts, or they're saving them to use them to destroy America with all of the terrorist cells that are already in America, which we already know about, and quite obviously the additional terrorists that can easily enter our country over our through our porous borders. So, which is it? If they were there, why didn't they use them? And you know what I find so interesting, Dr. Stan? Everybody is going along, as I said, the sheeple, with this, oh, isn't this fabulous? We have won the war. When you take an 80-pound sledgehammer and put a fly on an anvil and then drop it, what else was to be expected? And yet it is as if we have won this major war in an area of unlimited strength. I find it quite interesting.
Well, you know, the thing that is so disturbing to me is the fact that they have intentionally opened our borders. They have blocked any effort to have English the official language of the United States. You know, I can remember back in 1988 when I was running for Congress, and there was a senator called Senator Hayakawa. He was Japanese. But despite the fact he was Japanese, he was a loyal American. And he knew that what unites a country is a language. And so he wanted to have language declared the official, English declared the official language of the United States. And he couldn't understand why all the opposition to that. You see, Senator Hayakawa and many of the other people who were involved with him didn't understand that there's a master plan. And that is to create a multicultural society with multiple languages so they can have a nation that they can divide one unit against another. At one time, we were a cohesive nation. Now, of course, they're doing everything they can to promote separateness and turn so they can play one group against the other, this Hispanic against the white and the black against the Hispanic and the Oriental against everybody else. And this is being done intentionally and purposely and largely funded by the Ford Foundation. Where does the Ford Foundation fit into this, Barbara? Because you've been on the front lines of this battle for immigration control for a long time.
Oh, yes. The Ford Foundation comes into the picture starting in 1965 and become very, very influential in 1968 by providing not millions, Dr. Stan, but billions of dollars to form the groups MALDEF, LULAC, LA RASA, and many, many others. It would take a long time to go through the list.
Now, these
but
are
these
organizations.
Are the primary ones.
These are organizations for illegal aliens, aren't they?
Absolutely. That was the ultimate goal, which, of course, has also been funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, but primarily the Ford Foundation. In fact, we have an incredible article called The Birth of a Nation that illustrates very clearly that their goal was to, and I'm abbreviating this, to ultimately control the government of the United States of America by Latinos, primarily from Mexico. And, of course, we've been through the whole scenario of the nation of Aztlan and Norte California, so on and so forth, wherein these people followed those guidelines, of course, cheering and applauding when Prop 187 was abolished by Governor Davis, because then they had an even stronger hold to fulfill their vow, and I quote, "We will overcome by sheer numbers, using the vote if possible and violence if necessary.
Now, who said that?
That was by many leaders, several leaders, in 1995 in Riverside, California, actually. And these were leaders from MALDEF, LULAC, LA RASA, and multiple other organizations. This is at the same time that Art Torres, who is now head of the California Democratic Party, stated, quote, Prop 187 is the last gasp of white America in California. And of course, as we've watched their progress, we can't help but to admit they have been extremely successful, Dr. Stan, when we see some of the legislation on the books. In fact, I'm putting it out in our newsletter right now, the various bills that are being controlled by the racist leaders who have become elected officials, quote, by the vote, such as driver's licenses for illegal aliens, the acceptance of the weapon that we are most frightened of at this point in time, the matricula consular card, which translated into English is the illegal alien Mexican ID card.
I understand some of the other countries now in South America are giving it to their citizens so they can come in here and take advantage of our welfare and our jobs illegally as they come into the country.
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. And what is so terrifying about this whole scenario is the fact that there is absolutely no security involved with the issuance of this card because the terrorists are chuckling, believe me, because all they have to do is get across the border. And, of course, we've already been advised again, as we have several times in the past, that there are terrorist groups operating in Mexico. So all they have to do is to get a smuggler to get them into the U.S. Then they can go to the Mexican consulate, and there's no questions asked. All they have to do is provide a, quote, birth certificate declaring themselves to be a Mexican national, which, of course, these birth certificates can be obtained on any street corner from the illegal aliens operating within our cities, and then hand them $28, and they can get as many of these ID cards as they wish, and as many names as they wish, because there is no verification of who this person is, the date of birth, where they were born, so on and so forth. And then, obviously, their only task that's left is to figure out how to get to their terrorist cell.
Now, Barbara, why is it that the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation are encouraging illegal immigration into the United States, and irrespective of the Islamic terrorist component, why is it that they encourage violating our laws, oppose a one language, English, the official language of the United States, and why are they funding these illegal immigrant organizations or organizations for illegal immigrants? That doesn't make sense. Why would they be doing that? Can you tell me?
I think if you go into the details, it makes a lot of sense, Dr. Stand, because the people who initiated this effort are all New World Order globalists. And what better way than to import millions of people into the United States who easily accept tyranny. It's been their life in their third world countries. And then, a quote, using their vote, which of course we know illegal aliens from around the world are voting in droves, use their vote to control our government. And that's exactly the bottom line right there. It all leads back to the New World Order.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that if we look at it from the point of view of this hemisphere, the whole idea is to unite the whole hemisphere to do away with national borders and national boundaries. And, of course, they're doing this in stages. They're uniting Europe and doing away with the national boundaries there. Now, of course, they have a common parliament. They are moving towards a common currency. And, of course, the countries are giving up their sovereignty and moving into one big, happy Europe, which will include, of course, Russia. It's already included most of the Eastern European countries, and eventually will include Russia, because the dream has always been, of course, you've united Europe from the Atlantic to the Urals. But they can't tell the average person in Europe that, because they wouldn't like that. Most of them don't want to give up their sovereignty. Well, the same thing is true in the United States. They can't really tell the American people what their goals and objectives are. And they talk about NAFTA. Oh, we've got to have NAFTA. Look at those wonderful markets. Look at all the things we can sell to the Mexican people. You know, and once we get those tariffs down, once we get those restrictions on the border, why, we're going to be able to just increase massively our exports to Mexico. Now, that was the line that they used, of course, before NAFTA, the NAFTA treaty, why we had a positive balance of trade with Mexico. After NAFTA, why, of course, we had a negative balance of trade. Many of our industries moved south of the border. And, of course, this is basically devastating our economy, as is the World Trade Organizations and our industries moving to communist China. And even many of our major war industries are moving to communist China. And if we want to, of course, build our sophisticated weapons, we're going to have to get the parts of it from a country that is dedicated to our destruction. And the Chinese communists are. They've always intended to destroy the United States. So there's something wrong with this entire picture. But Barbara's absolutely right. This is all part of the globalist agenda. But they can't tell the American people that. They have to say, oh, shucks, we just don't have enough people to guard the borders. Or they have all the excuses, but none of the excuses are really true, are they, Barbara?
No, absolutely not. They are blatant lies and clearly illustrate that the vast majority of our elected officials are nothing but corrupt politicians who are very willing to sacrifice the very lives of us and our loved ones in exchange for the, quote, cheap labor and the illegal alien vote to stay in power so they can reach their ultimate goal.
But that's not the reason that the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation are behind it. They have a different objective and goal than many of the corrupt politicians. Would that be fair?
Yeah, the bottom line is these are all people who are involved with the shadow government, the Trilateral Commission, so on and so forth, who pull the strings of the political puppets. However, it appears that is happening again, as it did with Bill Clinton. And now he laid the groundwork, of course, in many, many ways, as have presidents before him, including George Bush Sr. That's where we first heard the words, fast track to the New World Order. But, of course, it had come even before him, and now it appears his son has picked up the torch and is leading right down the path to national suicide. It's simply that simple. And another thing I wanted to share with your listeners tonight, Dr. Stan, we've all heard, or I'm sure most of your listeners have heard of Ranch Rescue, Jack Foote, an organization who is down there working hard to patrol the border to keep these people, these illegal aliens, out. And even more importantly, I'm sure a lot of them have heard the name Chris Simcox, whom is an incredibly courageous young man who each and every night goes out on patrol and puts his life on the line to protect our lives from these illegal aliens, violent criminals, drug smugglers, and terrorists from coming into our United States and murdering our citizens, what they do with daily regularity. Now, as of 2 days ago, our very own federal government, U.S. Marshals to be exact, filed criminal charges against Chris because he unknowingly walked about 10 feet into a national park because there was no sign posted, so he didn't know he was in a national park, and he had his weapon with him. And, of course, he had a legal permit for that, but for this weapon, but that doesn't really matter to the feds. So they have now filed the criminal charges. Apparently, they would prefer that these barbarians come into our United States and slaughter our people. Also, a member of Ranch Rescue was falsely arrested. I believe this or not. Because of charges filed by illegal Mexican aliens with Latino authorities in Texas. And he has been jailed. He's been physically and verbally abused. And finally, Ranch Rescue does have an attorney to represent him. So I think it's really well illustrates that the most to be feared is our own government.
Well, yeah, that's pretty hard for a lot of Americans to accept, Barbara. I can accept it because I understand that there are some wicked people working for our government who have a different agenda, who do not believe in the Constitution they've sworn to uphold, but their loyalty is to this internationalist dream, this idea of the New World Order and the New World Religion. But to the average individual, as long as things are good, we're comfortable, we're warm, the economy isn't too good, but most people think it's going to get better. And after all, we've had a wonderful victory overseas, our military, our great military, 150,000, 200,000 troops over there, something like that, at least 150,000. Why is it we can send 150,000 people over to take Iraq, but we can't guard our own borders? That doesn't quite make sense. Why do we have 50,000 troops guarding Europe? What are we guarding it against? Aren't the Russians our friends? And can't 55 years after the Second World War, can't Germany and France defend themselves? Why do we have to have 50,000 troops in Japan? I thought the purpose of the American military was to guard the United States, not to guard the rest of the world.
And that's what it says in the Constitution, which, of course, the vast majority of our elected officials at this point in time have used as toilet tissue and totally betrayed their oaths of office. And that's exactly where it stands, Dr. Stan, and that's why we continue fighting. And you know what? We're going to win.
All right, Barbara, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization? Because Barbara heads a great organization, Southern California, and is right on the front lines of this battle.
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. They can contact us, and this is a number that is very, very easy to remember. It is toll-free 877-NO-ILLEGALS. And translated into numbers, and that is 877-664-5534, or go to our website, which is ccir.net. And
that is ccir.net?
Yes, sir.
Right, go ahead.
And we will welcome their calls, give them the information about our organization. But most importantly, Dr. Stan, the coalition is dedicated not only to sharing with our members the problems of this illegal alien invasion, which is a malignancy slowly but surely destroying its host, our nation, but offering solutions and providing them the tools that they can use, many from the comfort of their own homes, to get these corrupt politicians out of office and replaced by only loyal American representative.
All right, fine. Of course, that is 877-664-5534 or 877-NO-ILLEGALS. And of course, it's ccir.net. And certainly, Barbara's on the front lines of this battle in Southern California. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, the thing is that we have a lot of wonderful Mexican citizens here. They've come here legally. They want to be Americans. They want their children to learn English. They want to be part of our society. They're hardworking, God-fearing people. But it is the people who are here illegally, who have no loyalty to this country, and they're here to take advantage of our welfare system, to take advantage of our medical care system. And, of course, right now the president is offering to pay Social Security benefits to the people who come here illegally to work. What sort of madness is that?
Total sellout. And you're so right, Dr. Stan. We have so many members within the coalition who are of Hispanic heritage. And believe me, I never cease to stand in awe of their courage, because they continue this fight as strongly or more strongly than a lot of the rest of us do, because their lives, their physical well-being has repeatedly been put in jeopardy, because they are being victimized even worse than some of the rest of us, and they're out on the front lines battling to halt this illegal alien invasion and terrorists coming in as hard or harder than we are. In fact, two of our members spent their own money, their own time, to drive to Sacramento to oppose Senate Bill 60 by Gil Cedillo to give driver's licenses to illegal aliens, which we all know were the primary documents that the terrorists used to board the planes to massacre well over 3,000 American citizens during the 9/11 attacks. And to add to that, both of these people, and both of them are members of CCIR and went there to speak on behalf of CCIR in opposing this legislation, both of them had children who had been murdered by illegal alien gang members, and both of them had experienced the same situation. These killers had been stopped by law enforcement for traffic violations a short period of time before their sons were killed and yet released. So they went there to testify in opposition to this bill, and they were brutally attacked verbally by a couple of the members of the Senate Transportation Committee, Soto and Florenz. One of them was called a paper mache Latina, and the other one was called a racist. And, of course, we all know that the Senate Transportation Committee, which is controlled by pro-illegal alien advocates at this point in time, it passed that committee and is now working its way through the legislature. It's going to the Appropriations Committee. And they will continue fighting, as will we, to get this treacherous bill defeated.
We'll be back in just a moment here with Barbara Cohen. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And, of course, I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests. And if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to call us, it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Barbara Cole. And, of course, the CCIR stands for what?
California Coalition for Immigration Reform.
CCIR, the California Coalition for Immigration Reform. And, of course, Barbara and her group are doing everything they can to try to make people understand that freedom is lost. When you get enough people in here who will act, using the vote, and simply taking away your freedom and destroying the moral fabric and foundation of this society and demanding more money for themselves and their groups and, of course, increasing your taxes and violating the laws and destroying this very country. One reason that many of the people of Hispanic origin don't want this massive influx is because they don't want California to become another Mexico. They've lived and they know what it's like to live in a corrupt society that supposedly is run as a democracy. That's what Mexico is. It's always been a democracy, run by a ruling elite. And that's exactly what's happening here in California. We have a coalition, a ruling elite coalition that is determining the future of our state. Of course, we're giving reduced tuition to people who are here illegally if they want to go to our colleges or our universities. What's happening to the healthcare delivery system there in the Los Angeles basin? My understanding is a lot of the surgical clinics have just shut down, and certainly the county hospital there is on the verge of financial collapse. What's the truth about what's
Absolutely.
Going on?
Absolutely. Out of 23 trauma centers throughout the state of California, there are only 11 left, and the rest, of course, have been forced to file bankruptcy because of the deluge of illegal aliens who pay nothing. Obviously, this again victimizes U.S. citizens because they're always the last in the line. The emergency rooms are loaded with illegal aliens because those that are still open figure that they will be paid off by the federal government, quote, our tax dollars. And so citizens can wait until the end of the line. And in fact, we have cases, Dr. Stan, where U.S. citizens who have paid into our system all of their lives have actually died while in the emergency rooms because they were not attended to.
My understanding is
frightening. It is terrifying.
I've heard that in the hospitals close to the border on the other side, Mexican hospitals, if somebody comes in there seriously injured and they don't have any money or they don't have any insurance, they simply put them in an ambulance, send them across the border to American hospitals, which have to admit them and take care of them by federal law. Is that true?
Absolutely true, because it is federal law that we will treat all emergency cases. But, of course, it goes well beyond that. Once they are admitted, then, of course, Border Patrol is told to back off, not pursue deportation issues anymore. And the hospitals are stuck with a bill, which, of course, goes on and on for long-term medical care, and that includes heart transplants, lung transplants, kidney dialysis. These types of incredibly expensive procedures, once they're in there, then they just simply go forward, and these people who have been brought across by these ambulances and sometimes in buses, or just came here on their own, are given preferential treatment to U.S. citizens who, again, are funding the bill.
Well, now, Chris, why would the people at the border, the Border Patrol, allow people to be brought in here who are seriously ill in an ambulance? That doesn't make sense.
Of course it doesn't make sense. However, that is the word from the top from President Bush. Border Patrol people are leaving the agency faster than people can be hired, because if they attempt to enforce our immigration laws as they exist currently on our books, then they are prosecuted by our federal government. And so they are just leaving. They are not allowed to do their job. In fact, they are forbidden to do their job. So they are just simply getting out of Border Patrol and going to other careers. And that is so, so sad, because these are seasoned, experienced people who have just had it. Why should they, number one, risk their life, and number two, risk their career, against the government, first of all, their life, against illegal aliens who would just as soon shoot them, and of course we know of the many that have died along the border, just as soon shoot them as blink sideways, and if they try to enforce the law, then our own federal government prosecutes them. So, they're walking away. And this is why our civilian Border Patrol people are so incredibly necessary to help support them to protect our lives from these people who are coming across.
But of course, our government's doing everything they can to oppose and prosecute these people who are civilians who are trying to enforce the laws.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's as I said, I think an incredibly frightening situation. Because some of these people, first of all, we have Presidente Fox. Well, I'm looking at an article. Fox's rift with U.S. can be mended. And of course, we're talking about Presidente Fox with all of his demands on the U.S. government, and yet, not even responding to the 9/11 terrorist attacks until weeks after the event. The list goes on and on and on, but he's sure that his amigo, President Bush, and he, once all of the dust has settled in Iraq, can sit down at the table and again address his demands for amnesty for all of his illegal aliens in the U.S. at this point in time. For those who have not yet come, extend to them a, quote, guest worker program, which is a totally fraud scenario, and ultimately, quote, legalization for all of his illegal aliens who wish to come across the border and subscribe to our social services, which includes, of course, welfare, free housing, free food, free clothing, free medical, and the list goes on and on. So it will be very interesting, Dr. Stan, once the dust is settled from the war in Iraq, as to what President Bush decides to do on this situation, because Fox has not lessened his demands, even though he harbors illegal alien criminals who have brutally murdered U.S. citizens, men, women, and children. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Well, my understanding is President Bush wanted to certainly give legal status to all the illegal aliens, but there was just such an outcry from people across America that he sort of backed away from that.
However, until 9/11 happened, he was just about ready to go forward on that. So all we can do is wait and see if they are such good buddies after the dust has settled in Iraq.
Well,
that's all we can do. But I'll tell you right now, we're going to keep on fighting like tigers.
Well, now tell us what's happening down in Southern California, because you see, because of the degree of control of the media, we really don't know what's being said in your local newspapers and what's happening down there. First of all, are the people down there concerned about what's happening, or do they sort of think that this doesn't involve me, or I'll be raptured out of here before anything bad happens, or certainly God would never allow anything bad to happen to America? What's the response of the people you talk to?
More and more and more and more and more, Dr. Stan, we're reaching not only individuals, but groups. who are finally waking up and smelling the coffee. And we're very gratified by that. And we try to get speakers in here who will rally the troops. And we are constantly going to other organizations, sharing the truth with them. Obviously, Mr. George Putnam is an advocate of immigration reform. Terry Anderson, we're on talk shows constantly, and people call up. It's quite interesting. I'll have people call up and say, "Well, I heard you on X radio show today, and don't tell me this is what's happening." And we'll say, "Well, fine. If you don't want to hear the truth, then that's okay too. But if you want to know the truth and you want to know how to save the very future of your nation and the lives of your children, we'll be happy to talk with you. Now, do you want to talk anymore?" And the bottom line is, Dr. Stan, almost 100% of the time they end up joining the coalition and joining forces with us.
So are you beginning to pick up more and more people then?
Absolutely. We're expanding. We're nationwide. In fact, the coalition is the largest grassroots organization in the nation whose focus is totally on immigration reform.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that.
Oh, and they're wonderful, wonderful people. I tell you, these people come out from under rocks. You'd never believe some of the fantastic things they do. They're out there throughout the nation. We kicked it off here in Southern California. We are protesting each and every Saturday in front of banks who are accepting this scam matricula consular card, because it enables not only illegal alien criminals, but drug smugglers and terrorists to open bank accounts, which, of course, leads to laundering their blood money through these banks. I mean, it's a total betrayal. We're out there every weekend. We kicked it off here in Southern California, and now others throughout the nation are doing the same thing.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that. And, you know, we've actually had Jack Foote on from Ranch Rescue last week. We'll have him on next Thursday, next Monday at 3 o'clock. We're going to have Chris Simcox. We've got him on the afternoon of the 28th. So we're doing everything we can to get the information out, and certainly to applaud you for your work, what you're doing. Simply, if you have any of people who want to hear, of course, radio, why they can always listen to our programs 5 hours every day here at Radio Liberty. So what we're trying to get people to see the big picture, because immigration is an integral part of this, and it's part of an effort to destroy America by simply flooding us with people who don't believe in America, who would never fight for America, who do not understand that the difference between a republic and a democracy, and are simply want to embrace this concept of democracy without a realization that it will end up with the same sort of nation that they have here, that they fled from Mexico. Mexico was taken over many years ago with a one-party system controlled by the same people. Now they have a two-party system controlled by the same people, but of course there's really essentially no difference at all between Vicente Fox and the other group. They all want this total government, and they're all dedicated to the New World Order. In fact, Vicente Fox was educated right here in the United States, wasn't he? Where did he go to college, do you recall?
Yes. He was educated here, and of course he stated at one point in time that he was a graduate of Harvard, which was a total fabrication. He attended Harvard for exactly 6 weeks.
I see. All right. Well, it made a good story. I was wondering. I'd heard that story about Harvard. He doesn't seem to speak, English that as well as I would expect him to if he were a graduate of Harvard. But he is certainly associated with, of course, he was associated with the Coca-Cola bottling company down there, and executive working for them. So he's tied into the whole world financial complex. Mm-hmm. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or certainly 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give us a call. Well, I would love to talk to you, or you can talk to Barbara. But this is a major, major problem in America today, is the fact that the government refuses to control our borders. And there's only two reasons for this. One, they do not believe there is a terrorist threat because they feel that the terrorists are totally under control of people outside this country, and we control those people who control the terrorists. Because, you see, there hasn't been one major terrorist attack in America since 9/11 other than the anthrax attack, and that is came from our own military labs. And, gee, the FBI just can't find out who stole the anthrax and weaponized it from our own military labs. I wonder why not. And then, of course, but why have there been no other terrorist attacks here? And why is it our leaders aren't concerned about our borders? What do they know that the average American is not to know? Indeed, is everything an illusion? Is everything simply almost like the Truman Show, if you ever saw that wonderful film with Jim Carrey? If you haven't seen it, you need to get it. And that's the way I sort of look at what's going on today. We all live in the Truman Show. Well, we've got Dale on the line. Hi, Dale. How you doing?
Hey, great.
Hi, Dale.
Hey there. Wonderful day. Yeah, I've been following up, just being very close with what you're talking about on the LULAC and MALDEF. I'd never heard of these organizations, and as we go down the rabbit hole, there's plenty of directions to go in, but finding a couple things on LULAC. One thing I noticed is that they have their insignia, for whatever it means, but these people deal in symbology all the time. They have 13 stars and 13 bars on their sign and on their moniker there. But I downloaded their constitution, and it's a lot of this is understanding what these people are, how they view things, and the leadership and the laws that they use. And it's essentially it's a constitution that they say to obey the Constitution of the United States, but first it's the Constitution of LULAC that they're supposed to live by. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting, but I was so something to watch out for. But I was interested in this SB 60 that with the driver's licenses in the state of California. The time up for the committee was April 1st to submit our recommendations against. Do you have any information on that?
Oh, I certainly do, sadly enough. Oh. On AB 60, it was passed. That was Senate transfer, or SB 60.
Okay.
That was passed by the Senate Transportation Committee, pardon me, on April 1st, 7-3. The majority of the committee, who are Latinos, voted yes, of course, on it.
It's a straight racist vote. I mean, they're not interested in what's good for America, what's good for California. It's just these people are racist.
Well stated.
Yes.
Right. But if we say right, you know, if we say something, then we're the ones that are racist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's something wrong. Definitely, that's wrong. So,
Dale, I want to share with you another bill that is coming up that we've got to fight like tigers also.
Okay.
And that is being presented by Mr. Fabian Nunes. And Mr. Fabian Nunes wants, it's called AB, Assembly Bill 25, and that would be forcing every organization in the state of California to accept the matricula consular. Illegal alien Mexican ID card, and any other foreign government issued ID card as, quote, valid ID, which of course would even expand the upshot of giving all of these, would able anyone who had this card, this includes the Department of Motor Vehicles, would also be forced to give these people driver's licenses, which follows that they could, again, terrorists could board any planes they wanted to, open any bank accounts they wanted to launder their money. The list goes on and on and on. But I'll tell you, Fabian Nunes is a very dangerous man. He was one of the key leaders in opposing Proposition 187. In 1994, he and Juan Jose Gutierrez organized and led anti-Prop 187 rallies. The largest one, which was captured on film, which we have a video and an audio on all of this, he was captured on film during one of those rallies. Whenever they were talking about Proposition 187, he is at the microphone raising his fist and spewing lies.
You mean
lies.
The communist clenched fist?
Absolutely. Yes, it is. Absolutely. Right out of the USSR. And, of course, spewing lies and hatred towards people like me and other Prop 187 supporters. Then what was very, very interesting, during this rally, while our national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, was being played, he and Mr. Gutierrez were chatting idly with members of their mariachi band, which was on the lectern, and yet when the Mexican national anthem was played, they both snapped to attention and put their hands over their hearts and stood wrapped while it was played. And of course, during all of this time, the Mexican flags were flying high. So he's a pretty frightening guy, because just to show you that the contempt for our laws was so appealing, the pro-illegal alien organization known as the Los Angeles Unified School District appointed him to be their political liaison to Sacramento. And he subsequently became an assemblyman.
Okay, anything else, Dale?
There's a place for these people. Definitely. So thank God bless you for the work, and thank you for the information.
You're very, very welcome, and we hope you'll join us.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Dale. And if you're out there and you have a question or comment, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I think, of course, the most significant part, you know, is the way that the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and their friends at the national level, you know, put their people into key position in the Immigration Department, not to enforce the laws of this land, but to keep the laws, the immigration laws, from being enforced. And, of course, this is only happening, first of all, because the good people are doing nothing. Now, most of the good people are doing nothing because they really don't understand what's happening. They cannot believe that there is an effort to use immigration to destroy the foundations of our freedom and the Constitution of the United States. But the other side knows exactly what it's doing. It's getting its people into government. It's then seizing power and using that power against the very Constitution that they have sworn to uphold. Is that a fair statement, Barbara?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. In fact, the philosophy of the coalition is really very simple. And this was established in 1992, and we've certainly seen it become a reality, and that is, quote, until the U.S. controls immigration, all else is a moot point, as it will no longer matter. And I think that has proven very, very true, all the way from absolutely jammed freeways with these people to the killing of our own innocent U.S. citizens.
And, of course, there are an awful lot of lawlessness among the illegal aliens, isn't there?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. In fact, it is an average nationwide. And it got started in Los Angeles with the 18th Street gang. That 60% of their organization, their gang, was composed of illegal alien Latinos, and that sort of sent a ripple out on in the evaluation of the percentages of illegal aliens of multiple countries, but primarily Latino countries, of these organizations. And at this point in time, they figure that is just about an average of the number of those who are here illegally who compose the most murderous gangs throughout our nation.
Well, on that cheerful thought, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
I certainly do, Dr. Stan. Please give us a call. One person can make a difference. And together, we can take back America for Americans who truly care about our country. We're there with you all the way. We'll do whatever we can to support you. Just join us and work with us because, by golly, we're going to win.
God bless
because
you.
Because we're right.
Thank you so much, Barbara. It's always a pleasure having you with us, and we wish you well. We'll be getting on to other programs in the very near future.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless you. This is Dr. Stan, and that was Barbara Cohen. I hope you enjoyed hearing Barbara. She's certainly one of my favorite guests and a very, very courageous lady who's on the front lines of this battle and isn't getting paid for what she does. She just cares about America. Do you care about America? Do you care about your freedom, about your family, about your future? Well, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. If you're out there listening to us, we hope many of you would decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And certainly, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you haven't had a copy of the newsletter before, we'd be glad to give you one. Our latest newsletter deals with the PNAC Group, the Project for the New American Century, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, back in 1997 decided we were going to have a war with Iraq. And all this talk about weapons of mass destruction and the wicked Saddam Hussein, that was simply all the window dressing. You had to tell the American people something, so we told them they had weapons of mass destruction. We knew they had weapons of mass destruction. If we moved in, why, of course, they were going to use them against our boys, but we would overcome that, and it was all a lie. But, of course, just like the Gulf of Tonkin incident that didn't occur, that was a lie, too. And, of course, time and time again, they've lied to the American people and to our boys to get us into wars. And you'll certainly want to see my video, Iraq, the Untold Story. It'll be available very, very soon. We hope that many of you will join the Radio Liberty family and help us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. And, of course, we ask you now to pray for America, to pray for our boys overseas, to pray that the American people will wake up, that the ministers will have the courage to do what's right, and that at least some of our leaders will have the courage to stand up for the Constitution they've sworn to uphold. And then we ask you to remember my ministry, Radio Liberty, and to pray for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Very much against vaccination. So I was reading all his newsletters. I got